This week on the Canadian Tech Podcast, we talk about Apple Pay's proper Canadian launch, Microsoft's Canadian data centers going public, and the CRTC cracking down on cable companies. That's all next, and more on the Canadian Tech Podcast. Welcome to the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 71 for May 15th, 2016. I'm Derek Silva.
And I'm Jameson Roberts.
And welcome to the show. Stuart mm-hmm. Clark is off this week. He just moved to a new house, so he is no doubt exhausted, and we decided to actually give him a day off for once. But I am joined by recent birthday
boy.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, Stuart's only, you know, been original creator of the Canadian Tech Podcast, Sarah, so I suppose it's fair we give him a week off.
Yeah, right, exactly. But obviously, as you can tell, I'm joined by recent birthday boy, Jameson Roberts. Jameson, how are you?
I'm doing phenomenally well. Good. It was a wonderful birthday, and it was great seeing everyone, including yourself, Derek, today. So
I was able to make an appearance, yes.
It's quite the surprise. I didn't know that it was happening. My wife managed to keep everything from me and managed to keep me in the dark. So I would say that was a success.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she was sending out emails, oh gosh, maybe a month ago, I think, trying to gauge interest and, of course, capacity. And it was supposed to be a really great outdoor party. But, of course, Mother Nature had other ideas for you.
Yep. Well, London, Ontario got snow in May, so I mean, go figure.
It looked like hail this morning in Strathroy.
Yep.
Because I was out there. So, yeah, regardless, another disappointing Canadian weekend weather-wise. But it looks like...
Only if you were outdoors.
Yeah, which of course I was for at least... I wanted to be more so this weekend. So instead, I was indoors a lot. But you know, the 10-day forecast from here looks very positive, other than rain every once in a while, so hopefully things get better. I think we should get onto the news. We have a bunch of things to cover, and you threw one in there that I don't have a recap of, so I'll let you lead that one when we get there. In the meantime,
sounds good.
For the hundreds of millions of people who use WhatsApp, WhatsApp has launched a desktop app. Obviously, it's an extension of your phone. It's going to mirror all of your conversations and messages from your mobile device. The app is available for Windows 8 and Windows 10, and of course, Mac OS 10, 10.9 and up. And it's going to be synced up with everything that's happening on your mobile device. It does also feature support for native desktop notifications and keyboard shortcuts, of course, which will be great for folks like you and I, who no doubt rely on keyboard shortcuts all the time. But unfortunately, I don't use WhatsApp. I installed it a few months ago. And
I honestly haven't used it in like a year or more.
So I installed it a few months ago because at Olio, we had a client who wanted to include a messaging feature in their app. And they are going to get one, but that's going to be in phase two, which I've mentioned on the show before, starting soon. That starts in June. And they said that they really liked how WhatsApp handles it. So we're like, okay, well, let's have a few of us install WhatsApp and we'll see what the big deal is. And I saw a bunch of people show up in my contact list as already having WhatsApp. But the, you know, last seen timestamp was a very long time ago. So I know WhatsApp is really, really popular, especially in some countries. In Brazil, it's got a huge market share because of how expensive text messaging and data rates can be. And so, of course, if you're at home and you have Wi-Fi at home, a Wi-Fi network, then, you know, you use WhatsApp instead and you avoid all those fees. But so obviously you said you installed it and you haven't touched it in a year.
Probably more like two or three. honestly, I
so before Facebook I used bought it.
Well, and that's just it. Is this would have been pre iMessage, or like just as the cusp of it, and I didn't have an up to date phone or things like an iPhone or like one that would run it and stuff like that. And so I'd use it for communicating with some friends, etc. But the you know it's. I haven't used it, and I haven't even thought about using it. The same way that I installed BBM's, you know, text message and iMessage killer, you know, on my phone. Mm-hmm. I didn't end up using it because no one that I knew was using it. Yeah. If I knew everyone was using it or it plugged into other networks like Skype and iMessage and text message and things like that, I could see it being a great thing for that. But I can like for my workflow, I use iMessage, and if someone doesn't have an iPhone, I send them a text message, or I use Facebook Messenger. It's another app that just doesn't get used and left by the wayside for who I'm trying to contact. Now that being said, it's awesome to see them. You know, at this point, I want to say catching up with everyone else and providing a desktop app. They're at least, you know, what, 2 years behind, 2, 3, 4 years behind Apple. You know, Facebook doesn't necessarily have a dedicated desktop app, but they have your browser experience.
Right. And there was a WhatsApp web before this. There was a website you could use.
Yeah. Which is, you know, which was a good probably stopgap.
Sure.
I know that there are a lot of people that prefer native apps, and I certainly prefer a native app over, say, a web portal if I can help it, even if it is just a view into their website, because you get all the added bonuses like built-in notifications and things like that. But it seems like they're essentially playing catch-up with this, and they're not really doing any innovation yet. If they came out tomorrow and said, hey, we've not only put out this desktop app, but we're integrating Skype, iMessage, Facebook Messenger, BBM, and all of these things so you can have one location to collect all of your messages, that would be impressive.
Well, you know what? ICQ actually did that a little while ago, and I'm just looking at ICQ's website now. They actually already have desktop apps. And the only reason I thought of ICQ today is because
it's the granddaddy of everything.
Well, yes, of course. 1-888-34863. If you want to add me, that's my number. And of course, I still remember that from like 1999. But I was actually speaking to a London city councillor and a police officer last night because she said that she had just installed Periscope and was a little creeped out when she was looking at local feeds because, and I mean, as soon as she said that, I went to see whatever feeds were available in London at the time. And of course, these two teenage girls had a Periscope running called Roast Us, which based on the content was literally like, look at us and, or like listen to us for a little bit and then make jokes, right? Like make fun of us, which could be, you know, done in a good spirited way, like the roasts on Comedy Central sort of deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, and so I guess I can see why that city councilor would find that a little disturbing, you know, literally just a couple of teenage girls in one of their bedrooms being like, hey, make fun of us. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's a little weird or dumb, but there are a lot of actually really cool use cases for something like Periscope. And I told her, and I remember the story we covered a couple weeks ago about Kik and how it had become like predator territory number one for people trying to abuse, like sexually abuse children, like teenagers and stuff like that. So I was like, whoa, don't worry about Periscope. Go check out Kik instead. She's like, oh, of course. I haven't heard of that one either. I'm going to go check that out. And I mean, ultimately, Periscope is really a function of how you use it. It's not, I mean, you have to be broadcasting live for anybody to interact with you. And, you know, what you do, and they have a terms of service that, you know, you as far as I can tell, they actually do enforce where no nudity is allowed and that sort of thing. And, you know, you break it and you're kicked off or like your stream
ends. Like for Periscope, we use it at work for streaming. You know, if one of our team members is giving a keynote speech at something,
yeah,
or things like that. So, you know, there are very good use cases for it. But again, you have to, you know, it then becomes how well can that be integrated into other things? Because it's all fine and dandy to have this great service, but if it's not easy to share, manipulate, things like that, then it just becomes a lame duck. So.
Yeah. So anyway, ICQ used to be a multi-platform thing. They tried mm-hmm. to pivot a few years ago, and it looks like they've gone back to exclusively supporting their own network. But they do video calls, they do texting, they do group chats. I mean, they do all the same thing that WhatsApp and GroupMe and a bunch of other services do. I honestly mm-hmm. don't know how they're still alive. I know they're owned by a Russian company now. But, yeah, and then Trillion used to do the same thing. I don't know if you ever tried that a few years ago, but...
Yep, I remember.
Yeah.
I remember trying it out as well.
Yeah, so, I mean, Trillion was huge amongst pretty much everybody I knew. Like, nobody wanted to abandon the old... We didn't want to abandon Yahoo Chat, but MSN Messenger was the up-and-coming thing. And mm-hmm. so it was like, oh, what do you do? Like, what do you do for your friends are over there or friends are over there. But, you know, you don't want to ditch one or the other. And Trillion is still around. They support Google, AIM, ICQ, XMPP, Yahoo, Twitter, and more. Sorry, you were saying?
I tried it. I want to say I went back and I retried Trillion. I want to say last summer. And it was
pretty recent.
It was okay. But the Facebook integration felt really clunky. It was really hard to... It felt like it was... Now, maybe I'm confusing with something else because I'm always trying out different things. but it felt like it was hard to make it work right. Now, it could have just been at the time. Who knows? It would be interesting to go back and try it out and see, you know, whether or not it's gotten any better. So
I'm just trying to see if there's a... I don't think there's a Mac version here. It looks like there's strictly Windows. So that's no good. I mean, like, oh, no, yeah, it's available on the Mac App Store. Never mind. I might have to give that another shot. I haven't tried that in years. Mm-hmm. I'm surprised it's still around. All these things that's like, oh, yeah. That's from, like, the dark ages of the internet, like, 99, 2000, you know, 2004. It's like, oh, no, 10 years later, they're still going. Like, it's amazing. Mm-hmm. That's great. But
it's awesome. Still
surprising. Anyway, if you're a big WhatsApp user and want a desktop app as well, it's available for Windows and Linux. Or, sorry, for Windows and Mac. If you are on Linux, there's still the web version, so you can still use that. Moving mm-hmm. on. Yep. Apple Pay has finally launched properly in Canada.
Mostly.
Yes. Well, I mean, we have big bank support now, plus debit and credit cards that people actually use. So that's great.
Yep. And arguably the other ones are coming on board shortly.
They are, yeah. But by the end of the year, I think we'll have them all on board. And an Apple Pay VP did explain why the launch in Canada was delayed. So, of course, it now supports American Express, which it has for a couple months now, and debit and credit cards from ATB Financial, CIBC, Canadian Tire Bank, and RBC, BMO, TD, and Scotiabank, and presumably Tangerine, along with Scotiabank, should all launch in June. HSBC and MBNA are looking to add Apple Pay support as well. Those are probably two that'll probably get in there before the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the big thing was the fact that the Interac API, for lack of a better word, needed to be partially rewritten to support Apple Pay. It couldn't handle it initially. And so that explains why the delay. And of course, Interac being relied on by millions of Canadians every day, you can't just haphazardly replace code or add code without doing some significant testing. So,
you mean you don't want to bug fix that?
No. Oh, you meant to spend $45, not $4,500. My apologies. So, however, I will still say it's about damn time.
Yes, it is. It's very much about damn time.
Yeah, I think this could have been ready a lot closer to the initial Apple Pay launch if Apple had given the Canadian banks a slightly longer heads up. If that was possible, obviously, I'm not trying to make.
Maybe they dragged their heels trying to, because I know that there have been some banks that have been trying to figure out their own solution for things like this, either partnerships with Rogers and Bell, like pay all your bills through text message, etc.
Well, but so, you know, the RBC mobile app, the RBC wallet app, sorry, they separated them. Handled payments through my debit card without any involvement from Wind at all.
Mm-hmm.
So this, despite the fact that I don't have an NFC enabled SIM card, meant nothing. So I don't buy anymore this whole Rogers, Bell, and Telus, keep stonewalling attempts to get this done. No, you can go around them. It's an NFC chip with the right software, especially on an iPhone, which Apple controls the entire experience.
Oh, yeah.
It's much, much easier for them to get around any of the carriers. And RBC proved it very recently when they redesigned their mobile app. And just before they redesigned the Android app, they unveiled debit card support. So I was like, oh, well, great. I'm going to try this out. And it took a lot longer than it would to just pull out my card and tap the NFC chip inside my debit card. But it was still really cool to try.
Yeah.
And since then, they've actually split out the app into a separate wallet app, which I'm actually not a fan of. But regardless, it works. You don't need the carrier support. So the whole thing with Yugo Wallet needing an NFC-enabled SIM card in my phone, I think, is bull honky, I say.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless.
Anyways.
My boss.
One thing.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing I do like about Apple's VP's explanation about the whole, Interact issues and things like that, is it should actually make Interact more secure based off of what they're saying was needed. So I do, as much as this was a long time coming,
mm-hmm.
I do appreciate the fact that hopefully this will have increased a little bit of security for Interact as well, which is already wonderfully secure.
Yes. Interact is, as much as it is controlled by the big five banks or the big four banks, it has put Canada way ahead of the Americans and a lot of other countries in terms of moving away from cash and moving to secure, tokenized online payments. Like, anything you can think of is really thanks to the fact that Interact exists. It obviously puts the credit unions and a lot of the smaller banks at a disadvantage because they don't, I don't think they have the money to get connected to Interact. I suspect there's probably some sort of buy-in fee. And so
it would be nice down the road to see that essentially disappear, or have all Canadian banks have access to it. But obviously there are financial decisions behind that. So,
well, at this point, I think it'd be great to get some of the American banks onto Interact specifically, because going across the border and trying to use your debit card, Americans look at you like you're crazy. Meanwhile, the rest of us look at Americans like they're crazy. I'm like, what do you mean you're still signing for payments on your credit card? Why are you signing for purchases? Where's your PIN? Yeah. Where's the chip on your PIN? Now they have cards with chips on them, but they're still so far behind because everything is, everybody's competing against each other for a different quote unquote standard. Regardless, my boss actually tried, I think he's a CIBC customer. He tried paying for gas on Tuesday. He said it worked great, uses Touch ID. It was actually faster because of that than pulling out his card and putting into the gas pump and all that. And so he was thrilled with that process.
One of my coworkers tried it out on Tuesday as well. He tried it actually at a Tim Hortons. and it worked flawlessly. It was very impressive to see it. It was tap and done about as quickly as me tapping my credit card. It was the same length of transaction, just without having to carry an extra piece of plastic. So.
Sure, yeah. If you've got an iPhone 6 and you've set up Touch ID, it should be. I mean, ultimately, your phone doesn't need to be, or the screen doesn't need to be on. You don't need to go into the Apple Pay app or anything like that. Just make sure the NFC radio is on. Literally put your phone up to the thing, put your thumb on, or whatever finger you've put into Touch ID, and it just sorts itself out, and that's great. Like the same thing as your debit card. You just, you know, hold it up to the terminal. It's like, oh, look, there's an NFC chip. Done.
Yep.
So, yay, Apple Pay. I don't have an iPhone, so I can't use it. But
are you going to get one because of Apple Pay?
No. I can't stand iOS. I detest iOS 9, and it doesn't sound like iOS 10 is going to be any better. So.
I know, and we've talked about that before, but it's still one of those things where there are some little gems like Apple Pay that would be nice to be able to use.
Yeah, well, ultimately, if I had a fingerprint reader on my phone, but I'd only want to use it for my banking, not for unlocking my phone. Mm-hmm. But if I had a fingerprint reader on my phone, which my next one probably will, the way things are going, then yeah, I should be able to use that with the RBC Wallet app or maybe even Yugo Wallet app by then. So, in 6 months to a year, I'll be all caught up. Don't worry about it. I'm not crying. It's fine. Yet. Anyway. Moving on. Microsoft, we mentioned a few months ago that Microsoft had soft launched their Canadian data centers in Toronto and Quebec City. They are now officially open in general availability. So they now provide Microsoft Azure cloud computing services and Office 365 out of the Canadian data centers. And the really funny thing is that Microsoft actually had to double capacity because of overwhelming demand. And I know that they've mentioned in the story that they've already signed up a bunch of municipalities and corporations like Air Canada and Lululemon were already using Microsoft cloud-based services, and that companies like that will be moving their data to the Canadian data centers to take advantage of data residency and privacy laws and that sort of thing. So great on
actually,
them.
Actually, I'm not surprised that they had to double their data center size, mainly because of that. Like for example, at work, as soon as DigitalOcean opened their Toronto data center, actually much along the same time as when Microsoft did, we instantly started putting everything in Toronto as opposed to it living elsewhere. And I know that for a lot of places that are, you know, playing around with Office 365 or, you know, these different services, especially groups like universities, they wouldn't be able to leverage stuff like this without there being a Canadian data center. Or data centers. So the fact that they had to double their capacity is not a shock to me. It's awesome to see that they're taking these things seriously and taking the Canadian market seriously. And it's also great that they're finally open and that they can be used by corporations and companies alike for these services. So it's good to see, that's for sure.
Yeah. I don't really have much else to add. We talked about this topic I think a month or two ago, the fact that they were in beta and now general availability. They still have a few more products that they'll launch or services that they'll launch, like Dynamics CRM and Dynamics AX ERP solution. If you don't know what those are, feel free to look them up. Well, CRM stands for Customer Relationship Management Software, and ERP is Enterprise Resource Planning, so it usually has inventory, financials. It's like, you know, business line, you know, run your entire business type software. So they'll be offering that from the Canadian data centers as well later this year.
One little gem I will throw in there that's nice to see that you didn't mention is that Microsoft, with the launch of their Canadian data center for Canadian people, they've achieved 37 compliance certifications, including PCI compliance for financial data.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and that sort of stuff is pretty much table stakes now. Like, you need to have PCI, U.S. stuff, HIPAA is a big one for health information up here, PIPEDA, which is the consumer data law. PIPEDA, which is the same thing, but for Canadian health, electronic health records. Yeah, you need to have that sort of stuff because a lot of companies just won't even look at you anymore unless you do your part to help achieve all those types of compliance-related mandates. Obviously, it's still really up to you and how you configure the server and any firewalls you attach to it. But, you know, Microsoft, Amazon, SoftLayer, DigitalOcean, they have a part to play as well in terms of their physical, the data centers themselves and the security in place and that sort of thing. Or on, it used to be called SAS 70 Type 2. Now I think it's called SOC 16. Have a lot to do with handling customer data and your financials and that sort of stuff. And that, so that's a really big one as well. And then, of course, any ISO-focused ones, which are usually security-related as well. ISO 27001 comes to mind. Yeah, you for companies like Air Canada and Lululemon to want to do business with you, you have to. It's absolutely necessary to achieve those. So, but yes, great on Microsoft that they've achieved 37 different compliance mandates and should not have that as a hindrance to securing more business for their cloud-based services. All right, we're going to take a quick break here and thank our sponsor, Olio Digital Labs. Olio is a web development agency here in London. I work there.
Unbiased?
No, completely unbiased. I happen to think it's a pretty great workplace, and that we also have some fantastic clients as well that that we service. Coming up, oh man, we have lots. We're finishing up planning for that new version of a client software that they want to get developed. I think planning is done. Development should start this week. I have not been heavily involved in that project, but I will be as part of like user acceptance testing and beta testing in a few months. What else is happening? We actually partnered up with a company called Carve Design, who's a great local design firm. We partnered up with them on an RFP for the town of Smiths Falls, which is right smack dab between Ottawa and Kingston. So we'll see what comes of that. Oh boy, software changes, moving from our current cloud computing provider to a new one. We've had, we deal with a lot of retail clients and they would prefer we were using a different cloud computing provider, and you could probably figure, put two and two together and figure out who that is. So we'll be moving to a new one soon, actually. That's going to be a multi-week endeavor because moving a couple hundred gigabytes in a day or two and making sure everything, you know, still connects and works properly with DNS records and all that is not fun and not easy. So we're going to be very careful about that and make sure that there's no downtime. That's the major stuff. We have an intern for the summer. He'll be back from vacation tomorrow. He went off to Tahiti, little bugger.
Quite jealous. Well, it sounds like you guys are quite busy over there.
Quite busy. Yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff wrapping up. Oh, we just started building a small little time tracker app for someone who, I guess, just wasn't. Yeah, they wanted a really specific structure, and this is the nice thing about companies like Arcane and Olio and others where. You know, you go to FreshBooks and you're like, this is all right. You go to Harvest and you're like, not bad. You go to Toggle and you're like, yeah, okay, this could do the trick. But it's not quite there. And so you look at all these other off-the-shelf, you know, SaaS, software as a service-based solutions, and you're like, you know, over time, I'm going to get frustrated. I'm going to have to probably switch and like that. And that has a cost attached to it, too. Or like the interface, it has all the features I want, but the interface isn't the best. Forget it. I'm just going to go to someone who can actually build me this the way I want. I can probably host it myself for a reasonable cost because I'm not going to have huge load in this case, or huge server load. And, you know, and I've got some budget, especially when you look at the long term for pro plans for 10, 20, 30, 40 people for something like Toggle or Harvest or FreshBooks, it starts to add up. Yeah. And especially with something like, a lot of people, you know, will talk about like Salesforce as a great CRM solution. Yeah, for big enterprise, like it used to target really small businesses, and it doesn't anymore. They've actually bought a bunch of other companies to sell to small businesses to reflect the fact that their solution is no longer targeted at small businesses. But regardless, yep. we had a company come to us who said, you know, all these other ones are okay, but I still have some very specific needs. And, you know, can you do this? And I was like, yeah, of course, no problem. So as part of the sales process, we actually put together, I made sure we had like significant buy-in before I started doing wireframes before, of course, we had an agreement. But regardless, in this case, we did. And so I actually produced a bunch of wireframes myself for the mobile app that their employees will use to actually enter their time. And the nice thing about having a custom solution is I had an idea of how that should work, and the client said, oh, we really want it this other way, like date, time in for the day, time out for the day, and then tell me how you spent that day in like hour chunks. So like this client, this job, I was there for 2 hours. This client, this other job, I did that for 3 hours. And I was like, sure, that's an easy change. You know, the data doesn't change, just how you want the employee to enter it, that changes a little bit. So I altered the wireframes real quick, and then we did some wireframes for the administration interface as well. And what's the spend? Less than $7,000 after tax. They're going to have a fully fleshed out web app that they have full control over. They'll own the code. And of course, as they want to expand it and integrate it into some of their existing business apps like Sage Accounting and that sort of thing, we're going to be there to do that. So that's one of the benefits of contracting a web agency like Olio to do your work. So it doesn't always have to be about a website or a huge $100,000, you know, web app that you're going to go sell. It could be something small and self-contained, or small and starts out self-contained, but expands into other areas of your business over time. And like I said, you have full control over how that works and where that goes. So if you have anything like that, that you need developed, feel free to turn to Olio Digital Labs. You can find them at oliodigitallabs.com. And just pick up the phone or send an email or fill out the form and someone will get back to you within a day. All right. So thanks again for sponsoring us, Olio Digital Labs. And and we'll move on now.
Mm-hmm.
The CRTC says that cable companies are not offering fair $25 basic TV deals. And All right. The CRTC says that if cable companies are not offering fair $25 basic TV deals, they could risk their license renewal. So apparently the CRTC actually had some expectations in mind here for these $25 skinny plans, outside of the fact that they had to include a few specific channels and be $25 a month. And as such, cable companies could actually face trouble renewing their broadcast licenses. And we all know that there have been a ton of complaints submitted to the CRTC ever since the new plans were made available on March 1st. That's been all over the news. The CBC specifically has been all over that. And according to CBC, the CRTC recently demanded detailed reports on the cable providers or TV providers' new basic TV packages as part of their license renewal process. And apparently, a CRTC spokesperson did actually state that they could impose conditions on the companies that aren't offering the types of TV deals the CRTC mandated. A big complaint here is all of the extra fees and how much more expensive adding extra channels or bundles of channels on top of that $25 plan costs. A lot of people have said that if I take this plan and then add just a couple channels I want, I actually end up paying more than I did before. And it's like, yeah. Well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. And the $25 price doesn't include the digital tuner rental, so like the PVR or just the HD box that pretty much everybody mandates you rent these days or buy, and buying.
Or in some cases, for example, in the article, Bell is being quoted as saying that if you're not getting Bell Internet, you can't do this. Like, you can't get one of these starter packages because all of the essentially like streaming stuff requires Bell Internet. No, it requires an internet package, but...
Right, and so I was going to say, I can understand why it would require an internet service. Absolutely. Fibe is IPTV. It's IP over the internet, or a TV over the internet. But it doesn't have to require bells. Like, that's ridiculous. And that's actually one of the problems, quick sidebar, that I've run into with companies like Zazine and VMedia who are offering IPTV, but then you need to have internet from like an approved ISP. It's like this is counterintuitive. I'm not switching from Start Communications to some random company, or even if it's a company that I've heard of before. I don't want to switch just to get your IPTV service. You're already charging like $35-$40 a month. You don't tell me you're not making money on this. But anyway, a lot of people have had complaints. I don't blame them. Stuart and I have lambasted all three companies since the plans were revealed, because they do include extra, or the price doesn't include extra fees, and they are literally gouging people on adding extra channels.
Or they include things like, oh, well, you have to be on our internet, or things like that.
That's called tied selling. And in a lot of industries, like the banking industry, that's actually not even allowed. Like, a bank cannot say to you, oh, well, sure, we'll give you this mortgage if you get a checking account, or if you get a checking account and bring in like $5,000, a $5,000 balance. They can't do that. They're not allowed to. And the fact that it's still allowed in industries like this really sucks.
I want to say though that like, the past 2-3 years, the CRTC has really been on top of its game of calling companies out on what they're doing badly and what they're doing wrong, what they're doing that is harming, either customer loyalty or customer, harming customers in general.
Yeah.
The fact that the CRTC has to go back to them and say, look, shape up or ship out. You're not doing what we expected, which was, this basic package and reasonable prices and no add-on costs, is a bit ridiculous. I get that they didn't explicitly say these things, but they shouldn't have to. Right. It doesn't make sense that, Bell, Rogers, Shaw, these companies don't see the benefit in treating their customers well. They don't see the benefit in providing these small packages to try and woo people away from, cutting the cord and cutting the cable and stuff like that. They're essentially shooting themselves in the foot because they want to make next quarter's profit margin, as opposed to saying, we're going to take a bath for a couple of months, but down the road we're going to have a customer base that's larger and happier because we've put these things in place.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mini rants are done.
That's all right. That's what the podcast is for.
I'm still not going to get a cable package.
No. Although I have exciting. I got it a little exciting tidbit, and I don't know if I'm allowed to share it publicly or not. This really sucks.
Okay.
Do you think I should say it? I mean, like, like the person didn't say like, don't tell anybody, but blah 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 blah. So. You know what? I'm going to do it. I'm going to potentially break some news here. Start Communications is launching their own IPTV service this fall.
Ooh.
Whoa. Right? I was like, really? He's like, yeah. I was like, oh my God. Can you sign me up now? Like,
can I beta test this?
Yeah. Can I? Oh man. You want to find somebody to beta test? You call me. I'll be all over
for
that.
Me.
Yeah, or Jameson, of course, or Stuart. I'm sure we would all love to. Me, Jameson, Stuart. So anybody at Start Communications listening to this, I hope, first of all, I didn't bust your bubble, break the bubble, or burst your bubble. That's the term. But yeah, I'm really excited. I don't think we get enough listens on the podcast to really have a huge impact, but who knows? yeah. So, yeah, anyway, that's exciting. I hope it doesn't cost too much, or I hope it has a really good basic plan, you know, like the $25 one that actually doesn't cost a ton more on top, because I already have started communications internet and I'm really happy with it. So
given how aggressively they've been going after, you know, converting customers and converting customers over well with great support, you know, for their cable and DSL. But on top of that, you know, being really super aggressive with their downtown fiber program.
Yes.
It's impressive to see a company like that essentially stepping up and saying, yeah, we can do better for customers. And yes, we can provide awesome services. So
we actually the boss and I actually had a meeting with Start on with someone from Start on Tuesday about getting fiber at Talbot Center. It's already installed for somebody else, so there's nothing preventing us from getting signed up. We're just checking contracts and stuff like that with our existing provider, and we might make the switch soon. So fingers crossed. We'll be we'll be running probably 100 megabit symmetrical in a month or two. That'd be awesome. Five times the bandwidth for the same price we're paying now. Yes, please.
Yep, exactly. Hey, I'm looking forward to when they get my apartment building hooked up. And switching over to the fiber there, because there's no reason why living downtown I shouldn't pay $40 for a 100. I think it's 150 connection or something like that.
It's pretty awesome. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, man, get this out in Kilworth, please. Like, oh my God. Yeah, it's not gonna happen anytime soon. But you know, I've got 30 megs down. I got 10 megs up. I pay a little extra for unlimited. I'm fine, really. I mean, I'm not complaining. The internet connection here is great. But yeah, 100 megabits. Yeah, $50. 100 down, 50 up. Man, you could stream so much, like up, stream from your place to the web so quickly. That'd be nuts. And 250 megabits is only $75. Like, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
yeah, exactly. The capacity is huge. So, anyways,
yeah. Anyways,
little side tangent.
Yeah, because
for an awesome company, that's why.
Clearly, we are prone to those tonight.
Yep.
Anyway, where did my notes go? There we go. All right. So, related news, there is now a campaign that's demanding telecom companies unlock the FM radio found in many smartphones. Apparently, a lot of smartphones actually do include an FM radio chip. However, chances are it doesn't work right now. There's a Canadian online campaign matching an American one of the same name. It's been launched to put pressure on telecom companies and manufacturers to turn on this radio hidden in many cell phones. The campaign is called Free Radio on My Phone, and they say that most Android phones already have a built-in FM receiver, which obviously does not require a data connection or Wi-Fi to operate. And the folks behind the US campaign believe that iPhones also have this built-in radio chip, but that it can't be activated, and Apple wasn't willing to confirm this. It also lies dormant in a bunch of Android phones, but the campaign says it can be easily activated if wireless service providers ask the manufacturers to do so. Now, I used to have a SanDisk Sansa MP3 player back in 2005, 6, 7. I had a few for a few years. I remember having it when I lived in Kitchener, and that was 06, 07. No.
Well, a while.
07, 08. Yeah, 2007, 2008, thereabouts. And it had an FM radio in it, and it was great. I mean, it was really, really handy to have if I was, like, out for a run, wanted to listen to music, but didn't want to kill the battery because I only had, like, 10 or 15% left. I could listen to FM radio for, like, another hour. Like it was mm-hmm. the difference in power requirements was huge. And that's also part of the argument here is like, you know, for people who are in an emergency, like the Fort McMurray fire, wildfire, where cell phone towers could get, you know, could burn up in flames, and obviously telephone wires could as well, like landlines. FM radio actually works really, really well in those cases because as long as the tower's still up, there's nothing preventing, and of course there's electricity, there's nothing preventing you from actually getting a signal. Or, you know, if you were in your car and you were driving away from Fort McMurray and getting closer to a city like Edmonton or something like that, obviously there are stations in that area as well, and so you could pick up yep. quick emergency information in that sort of case. And it's actually something they do really well in the U.S. A lot of emergency broadcasts, standards, and that sort of thing that they rely on heavily. So I'm a fan of this. I think it'd be great if my Moto X had an FM chip.
I'm a fan of it for a different reason. Which is? I'm a fan of it from the standpoint of this would be a great way for the telcos to essentially not screw over low-income families and low-income people. Because they're not going to have, you know, anyone who's doing a pay-as-you-go, but they've got an Android phone that they could get for dirt cheap that has an FM radio. Mm-hmm. They're essentially dealing with a quasi-bricked device because they're not going to be using any data, or they're going to be using very limited amounts of data. They're going to be sending, you know, text messages. Maybe they've got an unlimited text message, you know, plan.
Right.
But, you know, you essentially, you know, if you know it's built into your device and it's enabled, it's a great way to allow people who are less financially fortunate to still have a little bit of joy in their life because they can listen to the radio on their phone. They don't have to have a separate device, or they don't have to be in another location or have a radio at home or things like that. You know, it makes their life a little bit easier.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all very true. Of course, the radio station companies have all signed on because they feel like they're losing out to podcasts and online streaming music services and that sort of thing. So I don't blame them for signing on to this, but I think it's just a great idea in general. Like, the chip is apparently there in a lot of these phones. I'm not really surprised that it's there because ultimately once you add Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, LTE, 3G, etc., throwing in an FM chip and just making one as opposed to two different models is a lot cheaper for companies like Qualcomm and Broadcom and Atheros and people like that. So, yeah, it's not really surprising that it could already be in here.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen Android phones with the FM chip turned on, or the FM receiver. And you know, apps to get at it. So again, obviously, it has happened in the past, and now I just kind of want to know whether it's in my Moto X or not, and an iPhone 6.
Yep.
Yeah. So I kind of want to know whether it's in an iPhone 6 or not.
Go CRTC, do something for us.
Yes. Yeah. Here's another one you can take. You can tackle CRTC.
Yep.
All right. We have one more.
Yep.
I was going to say.
And this one's mine.
Not our local story yet. You have one more that you added right before we went on. So, yes. So tell me about SpaceX.
So, as everyone should know, SpaceX landed, finally got a sea landing right, 2 weeks ago?
A week and a half or so.
Week and a half, yeah, something like that, which is super awesome. I mean, the I've seen some great YouTube videos about why the sea landing is important from the standpoint of being able to cut down on costs or being able to lift more. There's all kinds of advantages to it. But we're kind of at an interesting point now because SpaceX has landed two or three rockets, I guess, at this point, where they've put stuff into space. They've landed them successfully. Nothing has blown up. By all accounts, it's been a great, successful mission. Now comes the tricky part. Now SpaceX has to prove that these rockets that they've been building that are designed to be reusable and cost efficient to refit and fill with fuel, etc., work as such. So it's a great little Ars Technica article with a bunch of figures in there. Mm-hmm. The big one being that their commercial launch price for a company is $61 million, but their propellant fuel cost is only about $200,000. So if they can get their refit of these rockets down quickly, hopefully that launch price will come down, which means that means more space flight, which means easier access to space for science, for tourism, for colonialization, all of these different possible things.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to basically say, hey, we've done these things. Now is it going to work?
Yeah. So, yeah, you mentioned the $61 million price. The next target they want to hit for reducing the costs of flying a Falcon 9 rocket with a reused booster is $43 million per flight. So that's 30% savings. And when you want to launch a commercial satellite like this Japanese company just did, and SpaceX launched it for them, that's a huge savings. I mean, if I don't need to pay $18 million, I'm sure I can find lots of other places to invest that money. And so
either if it's consumer facing, you can either not charge as much to consumers, or you can charge less and make more money. Like, there's all kinds of different ways. So this is beneficial.
Yeah. Better dividend for your shareholders, what have you. And anybody who owns a mutual fund or something like that, you know, for your retirement, mm-hmm. would actually benefit from that. And, yeah, and they're hoping, well, the first flight for a previously flown booster could come sometime this summer. So that would be exciting. That's going to be something to watch out for. I've really enjoyed watching the flight videos and like seeing their command center and everybody. It's like watching like a NASA video when the Mars rover landed a couple years ago, and it was like super exciting and like everybody jumping up and down and all that. And it's like, yeah, but now we get to see this private company do it instead, and with a completely different mm-hmm. goal right now of actually making getting up into space a heck of a lot cheaper than it is right now. I mean, what if it only cost $1 million for their commercial launches? Like, that would be insane compared to trying to get space on a on the Russian Space Agency's rockets or something like that. Like, no, I can do it. We can do it here at home. I'm going to call up Elon Musk or one of his sales guys or what have you, and mm-hmm. And be like, yeah, I got this thing I want to launch up. Highly experimental, but hey, for a company with $1 million to burn and instead of $61 million, they're going to try it, and they're going to try it a lot more often than they would have otherwise. And hopefully this really propels things forward and we can finally get off this godforsaken rock.
Plus, also with them being reusable and them landing, we cut down on the amount of space junk.
Yes, hugely. Hugely. So, and yeah, being
all,
able to refurbish.
All around, it's...
Yeah, and fewer resources needed to build new ones in general. Right?
Yep.
So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens this summer.
It will be. Moving on to our local story, this is kind of neat. There's a fiberglass composite bridge that's going to be installed north of London. The Medway Creek Bridge is being replaced. That's near Ballymote, for anybody who knows the area. So instead of a concrete bridge, which is what's there now, a fiberglass composite bridge is going to be used. And pretty amazingly, it's only going to take a single day to replace the bridge itself. The bridge is actually built out of wood and then infused with resin that is completely resistant to corrosion from snow, salt, wind, etc. And so instead of the typical lifespan of a concrete bridge being about 50 years, this new fiberglass composite bridge should last between 75 to 100 years. It's going to cost $700,000 to put in. That's a little bit more than a typical concrete bridge, but it should last twice as long, so they'll probably get that money back. And the extra other really cool thing is that it's made in St. Mary's, by a company called Guardian Bridge. And apparently they call this technology the Lego of bridge building, because it's like a prefab house type thing where they actually build everything in their factory and then just like bring it in and like set it down, bolt it or what have you, and then it's done. So instead of closing the bridge for like 3 or 4 months, they only need to close the bridge overall for, I think they said 2 or 3 weeks. And most of that is to, A, take down the existing bridge, B, do some regrading and stuff like that, you know, before and after the bridge for the road and all that. Putting in the bridge itself is
pretty much the 2 to 3 weeks are for nothing related to the actual physical bridge itself.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yes, knocking, you know, taking down the bridge would probably be a couple days. So, okay. So, you know, there's that. But like, if they didn't have to do any work around the bridge, this would probably be done in a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a huge, huge cut down, from months of, you know, basically the whole construction season in Canada. So, and it's made in St. Mary's, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't really have much else to add other than neat.
I want to see it when it's done.
Yeah. For anybody who's wondering, the London Free Press does address the bridge work being done on Windermere Road in London. They couldn't use that here because they're actually just regrading things around the bridge and on the bridge itself. They're not replacing the bridge on Windermere Road. So this wouldn't apply. But for an actual replacement, like, oh, I don't know. What about that one on Sarnia Road a few years ago? Something like this would have been much, much quicker. Hopefully the next time we need to replace a bridge in the area after this Medway Creek Bridge, we will continue to turn to this company in St. Mary's and support a really great local company using some innovative technology that will actually save us money in the long run and result in fewer bridge replacements.
All right.
So, stuff we like. Jameson, what's yours?
I'm going to be a big nerd.
Gonna be? Don't you mean I'm going to continue to show how big of a nerd I am?
Continue being? Yes. Yes. This is on par with probably the adage of once you start playing World of Warcraft, you know, if you quit, you always go back. So far, I haven't regressed in my World of Warcraft playing, but I have regressed and I've gone back to play EVE Online again. Mm-hmm. There is something about EVE that is, even if you're not really wanting to play with other people, there's something incredibly satisfying about figuring out this incredibly complex game. The fact that it acts like a real world market, you know, you can actually spend hours doing asteroid mining and see tangible profits out of it.
Well, what do you mean, you know, tangible?
Well, like real cash? Theoretically, if you play your economic game right in EVE Online, you can end up earning enough in-game currency to pay for your monthly fee. They have a system called Plex, the internal game market. You can spend their internal currency for one Plesk, which is 1 month's worth of game time. So once you get your economic game down pat and you get rolling, you cannot pay for this game and enjoy it, which is kind of awesome to see, because there's a real world market of people who will buy Plesk and sell it in game for currency. So it's really cool to see the sort of the interaction of the IRL in real life world as well as the digital video game world. So
cool, that's neat. I've got one called Here. It's an iOS only app, unfortunately, and it is one of the trippiest experiences I've ever had. So the whole point of Here, from what I've been told, is to give you the ability to continue to listen to your actual existing surroundings But well, okay. So yeah, I guess maybe I've missed the point here. Here's the description. Hear harmonizes your hearing to help you be less distracted and reduce stress. It filters your acoustic environment, takes out harsh sounds, and turns noise into tranquil harmonies. If you use this app, you will become more focused and relaxed. Now, I won't disagree with that. It was actually really cool. And one of the things I've heard other people use this for is being able to actually hear their existing surroundings, but also listen to music at the same time. So if you've got this running on an iPhone or an iPad, you can listen to your music, but still listen to the conversations around you. So in a work environment where somebody could tap you on the shoulder or what have you, that's really great. So people don't think you're ignoring them, or you know that you have your music so loud, you're just trying to tune other people out. Some bosses get really uppity about that. Mine, thankfully, does not. So, but they have 7 filters, they call them, that you can enable and do different things. The one that makes you feel like Daredevil is called Super Hearing. And literally, the volume level around you, you can amplify to a ridiculous degree. And it really makes you feel like you can hear like just about anything happening around you. So that was kind of cool. The last one I'll talk about is the happy one. Oh my God. I can't even describe. It's like it takes the ambient noise around you and basically, the psychedelic scene from Alice in Wonderland, like the cartoon from the 1950s, where like people are speaking really high, speaking really low and slow, and da da da. That's what happy does. It is so messed up, but like hilarious. I bust a gut this week listening to my one coworker who's like big beard, really deep voice, this app changing his voice so that he was like, Derek, how are you? I was like, oh my God, this is what being high must feel like. And no wonder people enjoy it. This is hilarious. So I was laughing my butt off, and my coworker that was there at the time was like, what the hell are you doing? I was like, you have to download this app. This is amazing. It's so funny. So, and pretty much all the quotes here, like the testimonials on the iOS app or the iTunes App Store page, like pretty much say the exact same thing, like, hey, it's mushrooms without the mushrooms. I'll have to take this guy's word for it, but like that's I believe that that's an accurate description for people who have done mushrooms. I have not. So yeah, really funny, really cool. You know, lets you listen to two things. So if you just want to do like the relax or the office filter or something like that, oh yeah, or the auto volume, so people, you can still hear people when you talk to them, but it mutes all that other ambient office noise, that sort of thing. Really, really cool app, and it's free, so you really have nothing to lose. Give it a shot.
I'm definitely going to try this out.
I was going to say I thought that you were going to say I already downloaded it and I'm listening to you right now, and you sound hilarious or something like that.
No, not quite. Tempting
soon. Okay, and that does it for this week's episode. I think this has gone fairly well, especially considering we started recording live and anything could have happened.
Yep.
Or broadcasting live, rather, and anything could have happened. And Jameson, thank you very much for stepping up and helping me host the show this week.
My pleasure, sir.
All right, so for the Canadian Tech Podcast, episode 71 on Sunday, May 15th, 2016, I am Derek Silva.
I'm Jameson Roberts.
Oh, I almost stole Stuart's sign off there. I'll steal an older one. Good night and good luck.